All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And if you've ever wondered how an Iowa do-it-yourself investor turned 500K into a real estate empire using social media and creative financing, today my guest, Grace Gudenkauf, spills the secrets. Grace, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Before the show, we were talking about... You caught me on the
boat.
Before the show, we were talking that you've moved now from Iowa to Arizona to try to take your hands off the real estate portfolio, other things happening in your life as well. But I really like the idea of separating yourself from your business to really force you. It's like the limitation forces you to evolve. So since you've moved, what has that done for your day-to-day business and your profile?
Oh my gosh, everything. Like you hinted at in my intro, I was the cleaner. I was the painter. We did everything ourselves starting out. And that's great to get started because you don't need as much money, but it's so hard to scale. So when we had the opportunity to move, and I always wanted to move, I took it and ran with it. We moved for my partner's job, but I also was like, I'm moving for my job. I got to get out of my own way and hire the right people, because if I want to have, you know, a team, or I have a couple businesses, if I want to build an empire of any sort, I can't do it all myself. And that's what I'm doing. So I got to move and get out of the way.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I was talking to someone on one of the interviews yesterday, Darren Wright, and his biggest limitation was he went through a divorce and he was unfinanceable for a period. And it forced him to stop using his own money and start using other people's money. And now they're acquiring a 48-unit apartment block this week. So it's really interesting how the limitations can help you evolve. So with that in mind, what are some tips that you could give someone that is leaving their business market that have kind of helped you navigate this transition?
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing I did was I decided to hire a full-time employee. I had a part-time manager, an internal manager. I paid 10 hours a week to do all the tenant communication. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I left, I started picking up some blips to pay this guy. And because now I had a full-time employee who could do all my walkthroughs, do all the material runs, do all the inspections. And I had a mini freak out the day before I hired him. And like 2 weeks in, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever done for myself. It was definitely a jump, a leap for me. But I needed him to move to the next level of my business. And I really don't believe in property management companies. I think that you can just never get a great product from them because they operate on such slim margins. They can't give you great service. Mm-hmm. So I'm always in the camp that hire somebody 10, 20, even maybe 5 hours a week to do your management for you. You can still sign the lease and accept the rent, but they can do all those things. So that's a tip I would give somebody, is everyone thinks it's either hire a manager, a management company, or do it yourself. There's actually a third option. You can hire somebody internal, pay a fourth of the price, and get five times the quality.
So with all the things going on with your business, and especially with having already, because a lot of people either have no employees or they go to a management company and they kind of never have any real employees. You've already had some people working for you. How do you build the systems of what you were doing as a do-it-yourself person, which we all kind of start as? What kind of processes have you gone through to develop those systems to allow you to give away some of these tasks and still get it done properly?
Absolutely. I love talking about systems, and it comes down to having checklists and what some people call playbooks, a standard operating procedure. Might sound scary, but most people probably have those at their corporate job. It's how it tells you how to do something. Maybe it's called a procedure, a company policy, or an SOP. Doesn't matter. It's the same thing. And so I started building those out when I hired my first person. And it was incredible for me and my business because it eliminated emotional decisions. It eliminated decision-making in the first place because I just followed this checklist, and it helped me delegate. And if that sounds scary, what I did with my second property manager, the one who took over the part-time person, is I would just record videos of me doing something and send it and say, make this into a checklist or make this into a playbook. And then now you know how to do it. So you really got to start thinking, what does an actual business do? And what would an actual CEO or business owner do in this position? And it's having policies and procedures and checklists. And it can start on day one, even if it's five bullet point checklists, it can start like that. Doesn't matter, but it will grow and it will help shape you in your business.
Yeah, and just thinking about, because we have, I'm filling in for Dave Dubow on the show, and the first thing I received was a standard operating procedure, and that thing helps me make sure that I'm doing all the things that were in his mind. Because as an owner operator, especially at the beginning, it is hard to unpack what it is you're doing because it's become natural. It's become unconscious competence where you're not even thinking about what you're doing, you're just doing. And so how much of that at the beginning, what kind of challenges were you having to update these things? For people who are especially on the property management side, there's so many ways to do property management. People have so many opinions about, oh, this tenant is screen it this way and do that, and evictions from county to county. So were there challenges in the SOPs themselves or the training? Like, fill us in on some
Yeah,
of that.
absolutely. Every time, what I did is I started with a pretty basic playbook of management. And it was like, here's where I accept rent. Here's how you do a showing. Here's who you call for maintenance. Like it was a, maybe a page. And then every time my manager would ask me a question, I'd say, let me update the SOP. So that way I routed everything through that playbook instead of making another mental one-off emotional decision on that person. I would say, how do I systemize the decision I'm about to make? If she says, hey, so-and-so's late on their rent. Instead of making a gut decision, I would get out that SOP and write a little policy. I'd say, okay, late on rent means X, Y, and Z. At X, the second they're late, this happens. Or maybe I wait 3 days before I post a notice. I don't recommend. I think you should post a notice immediately. But I just made it a system, and I just did those mini systems one at a time. Instead of sitting down and trying to spend 2 days on an SOP, I started a little one, and then every time she'd have a question, I'd go add to it. And I still do that. Like even a week ago, my new manager had a question. I said, let me update the SOP.
So it's like a center point of conversation because it can feel so easy to just answer the question in the air,
Right.
but it just floats right off.
Yep.
One of my mentors used to always say, especially when building out sales procedures and procedures for training other people in the business, he would call it documented leadership. Because that's really what it
I like
is
that.
that they need to look to these documents, and just constantly be documenting everything you do, because you never know when that question is going to come up. And I really like how you're using it as a, instead of it just floating away, it goes to the document and it gets updated. And with the collaboration of like Google Docs and things like that, you could see it in real time. So that's a really great point, because I think a lot of people we'll hire someone and be like, oh, I used to be a property manager. Well, just do it the way you used to do it then. And
Right.
then, well, that's like hiring someone out at your restaurant and be like, I used to make hamburgers, and okay, go make them how you used to make them. It's nothing like the recipe, nothing like your restaurant. So really having those procedures right down to the position. So have there been any challenges since you got to that position that you wish, oh, I wish I was back in Iowa.
Honestly, no, not 1 second have I wished I'm back in Iowa. Of course, there's been challenges, of so many challenges. I found termites in a rental the other day. I had a buyer freak out. They're good now, should close tomorrow. Went through an eviction a few months ago. That wasn't fun. But in general, it's just harnessing the power of your team and trying to learn and grow every step of the way. And when I hired my manager, I told him like, hey, I don't have this all figured out, but I've got a pretty good start and we're going to work on this together. And now what I'm trying to learn is instead of telling a team member to do something and here's how to do it and when to do it and why and what sources, I try to just tell them the outcome I want so that they just figure it out. And that's been really hard because, you know, I want to set people up for success and maybe I want something done a certain way, but I can't forever tell everybody how to do their job. So that's something I've been practicing lately.
Yeah, there's an interview with Steve Jobs, and he talks about vision. And so when people have a vision of the outcome, you can allow them to find their own way. It might actually be
Yeah.
better than your way of doing it because you've just done it that way and it's worked for you, but what works for you might not work for them. And really the outcome and the vision is what we have to display when we're leading people. So when you're looking at your portfolio and from afar now, are you planning in the future to start investing where you are, or are you going to continue working in that market? What are the plans for the future?
Initially, I wanted to invest here in Tucson, Arizona, because I thought this is a good appreciation play. I was all cash flow, it'll balance out. The second I got here, I realized, oh, wait, that's starting a whole nother business. Do I really want to do that and build out a whole other team? And we found a property off market here, flipped it for ourselves. And so I live here now. But besides this, I probably won't do anything in Tucson unless it falls into my lap. And we know that great deals don't fall into laps. You have to
Yeah.
work and find them. So I likely won't invest here in the new future.
So what does the future hold then as far as what your plans are?
Yeah, I'm really excited to grow my team in Iowa. I'd love to get into development. I'm in a smaller town where it's easier to be a player rather than in Phoenix or Tucson, where there's millions and millions of people. So I'm excited to grow that part of my team. I'm hiring my dad, actually. He's retiring, and so that's gonna be fun. Fun in a loose term. But
It could go
I'm
either
just
way.
excited to grow my team. Love that.
I said it could go either way. So we'll
Yeah.
see how fun will
We'll
still be
see.
had. Now,
Yep.
when it comes to real estate, the difference usually between those who really take it and run with it and those who maybe decide that isn't for them is typically the unfair advantage. So what do you feel comes easy to you that other people find difficult to do?
That's a great question. I think my unfair advantage and the reason I ever invested in my market in the first place is because I was born and raised there and I know so many people. My parents are from there. So it was a lot easier for me to build a really strong team and get off-market leads and find good tenants because of my roots in that area. And then I would say my second unfair advantage is I think that I do my best to focus on being a business owner. And I think that's something that so many landlords or people who invest don't do. They think they own a rental property, not a business. But you do own a business. Maybe you don't treat it like one, and maybe you're the only employee, but you own a business. And so I think that's something that I'm really good at. Of course, I work on it every single day and I have a lot to learn, but I would say that's an unfair advantage that I have.
Yeah, looking at it as a business. I remember I was interviewing another gentleman, Paul Montalego, and he said, I look at apartments, people can't use the mindset of like, oh, multi-unit. It's a multi-unit apartment block. He says, nope, it's a business. I have tenants. Those are my
Clients.
employees. I have washing machines. Those are my income centers, the parking. So his entire mindset was not to wash it with real estate at all. He washed everything as like, it could be a convenience store. It could be an apartment block. It could be a dock where people are parking boats. All of them are businesses, and that's how I approach everything. So I think that you're well on your way to kind of figuring, or at least continuing to do what you're already doing. Now, with development in mind, you're going to have to raise some more capital. And what are you doing right now to fund your deals?
Excuse me. I'm sure we'll cut that out. Right now, for funding my deals, I do use a lot of private capital. I have shown up very, very purposefully on social media to cultivate those relationships and find private money lenders. And I have three or four kind of on rotation that I work with. And currently have one who's going to invest in this new development project I'm doing, trying to build two shipping container tiny home Airbnbs in downtown Cedar Rapids. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, just continuing to work my network. Ask. That's the first thing. And know that I can make somebody money while they make me money, and it can be a win-win.
Yeah, you're really are swinging for the fences with like everything the city doesn't want, a container,
Oh,
Airbnb,
yeah.
home. You couldn't ask for a more challenging development, but if you can pull it off, you can set precedent and really start rolling that out. So you'd mentioned that social media is one way that you're connecting with real estate investors. How are you utilizing that to expand your network of prospective investors?
Yeah, I just try to be really authentic and show the ups and downs in the day to day on social media so people feel like they can connect with me. I really don't vibe with people who, try to show just the glitz and glam and fast cars and fancy planes. That's totally not me. I think that's hard to connect with and relate to. So I'm on Instagram all the time talking about my business, and then I also have a Facebook page that's more for my market, and that's how I find a lot of off-market deals and also show my friends and family what I do and befores and afters and what I'm doing in the community. And people send me off-market leads, tenants, contractors, ask us how they can invest, and that Facebook page really, really works for me.
So now that you've got these leads coming in from the social media, I guess you'd call it marketing, but more like action leadership. You're out there doing things. People are attracted to people who are doing things. And so what have you found most effective once you have that lead or that contact to really keep in touch with these prospects and nurture that relationship?
Yeah, honestly, I could do such a better job at this. For me, I want to also like my investor. And so I've had a lot of conversations with people who have wanted to invest that we've never moved forward with. But I like that I know my investors, I know their goals. So I always tell them, I'm going to be all over social media about this project, and that's where you can keep up with me. But during the project, I'll send a once monthly email. If you want, I'm willing to do a quick phone call. But because I am so open on social media, you'll be able to follow along with the project, which I would say all four of the investors I've worked with have never, ever asked a question. They just gave me the money and said, "We trust you." But yeah, I could be better at it, but that's my process at the moment.
Okay, so this one kind of helps the people at home really figure out where they're going. And are you a find the deal and then the money, or do you prefer to have your capital lined up and then you go looking for deals?
Deal and then the money. I always say if it's a good deal, you'll find the money. I am of the mindset that I can get whatever money I need. If I find a deal, I will line it up.
So when you're looking for deals, do you find it challenging to find deals in smaller markets?
Yeah, that's definitely a limiting belief I've been trying to work through is every time I flip a property, I'm like, that's one property I'll never have as a rental because I started the first 2 years, we didn't sell a thing. I've only flipped like three or four properties. But trying to work through, okay, I can buy, I can extend my area. Everything I've ever done is within 15 minutes of each other, which is quite a tight radius. Like to have done 25, 30 properties and a probably 10 mile radius is a very small area. So working on how do I expand out and get confidence in these smaller towns that are surrounding, or go 20, 30 minutes south to another big town. And I think I'm definitely going to hit a point in my business where I'm going to have to do that unless I become like the number one person in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And I don't really have the desire to do that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? They might buy the flip. Beat it up, and you might be buying it in a
And then I
couple of
get
years. Yeah,
it
you might buy it again in a couple of years. So, you mentioned before the show that you run a network, for female investors, women investing in real estate. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, I run Women Invest in Real Estate Wire. It started as a free online meetup 3 years ago because I just wanted to meet more young women in real estate because I didn't have anybody in my real life. to talk about real estate with. Found a really great friend who we decided, let's make this meetup an actual thing. And now we do retreats across the US. We have a podcast, we do courses, boot camps, and we just have a lot of fun. And our big thing is, we're not doing real estate because we're obsessed with real estate. We do real estate because we're obsessed with the life that it gives us. And it's been so incredible to find so many amazing friendships of like-minded people who you can go enjoy those fun things that this financial and time freedom from real estate gives you.
Yeah, that's really the, people typically they're like, I want to make money in real estate. And it's like, okay, you could make money doing a lot of things. But I think the real underlying motivation is always time freedom because, yeah, you're going to have to take a call here and there and you have to do this and that. But ultimately, it's almost entirely on your own terms, which really helps navigate that time freedom because everyone's got to do something. Otherwise we'd probably go crazy. So everyone's got to do something, but the real estate really does allow you to like put that meeting in your calendar on your own schedule. So if people want to find out more about the group, Wire, they want to connect with you, give us some social medias, give us some websites so that they can what should they do to find you?
Yeah, you can find Wire at womeninvestinrealestate.com. And the best place to find me is grace.investing on Instagram.
Simple enough. People can definitely find that. Well, I really appreciate your time here today, Grace, and I'm sure the people listening at home are really gonna eat up that SOP stuff because I think that's a huge
I hope so.
challenge. Well, everyone's trying to invest remotely these days, right? They're trying to get to markets that make money. And so I think the biggest challenge is how do I systematize that? So I really appreciate your time today, Grace.
Thank you.
No problem. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.